the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
It's Culture Club time, and we're delighted today to be joined from Mogwai by Stuart Braithwaite. Mogwai are playing in Heineken Big Top on the 24th of July as part of the Galway International Arts Festival in conjunction with Roisin Dubh. Let's just hear a little bit of Mogwai. This is God Gets You Back from the most recent album, The Bad Fire. For those who are not familiar with Mogwai, tell us about the band, please, and the type of music you do.
Yeah, we're a rock band from Glasgow, Scotland. A lot of our music, but not all of it, is instrumental. We're quite a loud band. Our music is quite emotional, I think. And yeah, we're very, very handsome boys. Apart from that, there's nothing else to say.
And when you are playing in Galway, is it very much that you'll be focusing on the new album, or will you have a lot from the 10 previous albums with which a lot of people will be familiar?
I think it'll be a mixture. You know, we're still playing a few of the new songs, but we definitely go back to the very start of the band and all the different eras of the band during the set as well.
You do an awful lot of soundtrack as well, don't you, as well as doing your own albums?
Yeah, we do. We've done a film, a couple of documentaries, and quite a few TV series. So yeah, it's something we've been doing for the last maybe 15 years, and it's a nice way of making music without having to travel the world.
We had Stuart Copeland on the programme recently, the drummer from The Police, who's done an awful lot of work as well in soundtracks for movies and TV shows, and indeed for gaming. How much difference is there in doing that and actually providing music for an album or for a live gig?
I think the main difference is if you're doing a soundtrack, you're part of a team, so you've kind of got to kind of go along with what the director wants and yeah, you're not just doing it just for yourself. You're part of a bigger project. So yeah, it's more collaborative.
But what you're doing in Mogwai, a lot of that as well, is it's the sound. What sort of sound are you looking for out of it? I mean, you're a rock band, but you're mainly instrumental. There aren't that many bands that go strictly on the instrumental route, are there?
No, it's a little bit unusual. There's a few great bands who are completely instrumental, but yeah, it's just since we started the band, we had a bit of both, and it was always the instrumental music that seemed to connect more with people.
And are you sort of an antidote to Britpop, given that you started in 97? I don't think you've been very complimentary in the past, have you, about what was sort of era-defining in British music?
Yeah, I think it seemed very silly music to me. And I guess our music is maybe a bit more serious, and we were looking more to bands like Sonic Youth and My Bloody Valentine and The Cure and these kind of bands. And yeah, it just didn't really connect. I mean, there's a few of those bands were fine, but it just seemed to be, especially back then, that it was all or nothing, and that was the only music that people were willing to really engage with.
Stuart, we always start the Culture Club by asking people to nominate the first single that they can remember buying. Tell us what you can recall.
Yeah, I remembered the song, but I didn't actually remember who wrote it, so I had to Google it. And it was a song called Let's Go All the Way by Sly Fox, which is kind of actually sounded pretty good when I checked it out. But yeah, I remember buying that in Woolworths or whatever in the mid-80s when I was a wee boy.
I'm not sure I know what this. So I'm looking forward to hearing a little bit of this now. That sounds very much like heavily influenced by Gary Numan and Tubae Army.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's quite an interesting song because there's a lot of technology on it as well, isn't there? There's a lot of samples and, yeah, it's quite anthemic. So, yeah, I actually kind of a little bit trepidatious about hearing it, but then I actually thought it sounded pretty good because I hadn't heard it since I was a little boy.
Now, favourite album, you've given us a few and we'll talk about the three of them, or the four of them that you actually gave us. Dinosaur Jr. is a band I haven't heard for a long time. You've gone for Living All Over Me. Tell us about why you've picked that one.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this kind of like bridges a lot of different kinds of music. It's sort of somewhere between punk rock and classic rock, and obviously they were a very influential band with grunge. And yeah, it's as a guitar player as well, I find the guitar playing on it really, really inspiring. Jay Mascis is a great musician. And yeah, I think for this style of music, I think this is maybe as good as it gets. I really love this record.
You have Public Enemy, It Takes a Nation of Millions.
Yeah, again, very, very ahead of its time. A lot of the lyrical content still very pertinent today, you know. And I think, again, going back to Dinosaur Jr., I think when a musical culture appears and someone appears and just kind of creates a kind of era-defining classic, it's always pretty special. And I think this definitely kind of goes into that category.
And then you also have The Cure and Disintegration. And you've already mentioned The Cure has been sort of a landmark for you.
Yeah, they're one of my favourite bands. And this was actually the first album I ever bought. And it's a timeless record, isn't it? It has some incredible songs on it, just amazing sounds, very emotional. Really, I mean, they're bigger now than ever, so it's really connected with an awful lot of generations of music fans. So yeah, it's definitely one of my favourite albums.
And then also one that many people have brought up, David Bowie, for amongst their favourite artists or albums on the Culture Club over the years. You've gone for the album Low. Why did you pick that particular one?
Yeah, this is just an album that I go back to a lot. It's musically very interesting. It has a lot of weird kind of ambient stuff on it, but also kind of quite upbeat music. I think he improvised a lot of the lyrics. I think David Bowie was, people throw about the words genius, but in terms of pop music or rock music, definitely as close to genius as you can get. And this album is it just kind of, for me, kind of encapsulates everything about how mercurial and how innovative he was.
Let's hear from Low, Sound and Vision.
Blinds drawn all day. Nothing to lose, nothing to see.
David Bowie, Sound and Vision from the album Low. We have Stuart Braithwaite with us, guitarist with Mogwai for the Culture Club today. And given your love of Bowie, I suppose no surprise that the Velvet Underground is amongst your favourite bands. It's very much a theme there, isn't there?
Yeah. I had a big, well, I've still got a big sister, but when I was young, my big sister was a big music fan. So I got to hear a lot of really great music at a young age. And the Velvet Underground were a band that I immediately just kind of got blown away by just how kind of interesting and unusual the music was. And all the great bands, I think, kind of complement each other, you know, like maybe not the best guitar player or the best drummer, but together them playing just sounds amazing. And that, I mean, not that the Velvets weren't good musicians, but it wasn't a collection of virtuosos. It was just a collection of very inspired people with really good ideas and really open to influences. You can hear the influence of free jazz in their music. You can hear the influence of pop music. You can hear the influence of protest music. Yeah, everything about it's incredible.
A little bit of the Velvet Underground, so Sunday Morning. Sunday Velvet Underground on Sunday Morning. You spoke about virtuoso performers there. You've got the Jimi Hendrix experience as well as amongst your favourite bands on the basis of his virtuoso guitar playing, is it?
I mean, that's a big part of it, but I think the imagination is more important than the technical ability. But yeah, no, literally no one could play the guitar like Jimi Hendrix, and just kind of very era defining as well. Sadly, he died young, so we don't know what he would have done when he was older. So he's kind of inextricably connected to that kind of summer of love, psychedelic kind of explosion in America. And yeah, I just find every time I hear Jimi Hendrix's music, I feel happier and smarter, and you know, it does all the things that great music does to you.
And what do Joy Division do for you?
They don't make me feel happier.
No,
but they're very inspiring, and I think Joy Division, from a different era, from the punk rock era, they encapsulated punk. They were just a bunch of people that saw the Sex Pistols, realized that you didn't have to play like Hendrix to make great music, and just came together and worked hard and made some really, really timeless music. And in many ways, they're the perfect band, you know, because they were way more than the sum of their parts, and they worked so hard, and obviously tragically, because of Ian Curtis's death, didn't get to enjoy the success they deserved while they were going. But I mean, right now they're probably considered one of the best bands of all time, not just by weirdos like me, but yeah. So if anyone listening has not listened to the music of Joy Division, I would encourage them to go and check them out.
And one other band, Wu-Tang Clan.
Again, that's another band that are more than the sum of their parts. And like the story of that band's incredible too. Kind of just young guys in New York in the 1990s. One kind of really focused guy, the RZA, with two of his cousins and another six people. I mean, there was nine people in Wu-Tang Clan just coming together and making really, really timeless music. A lot of the guys went on to make their own solo records, like Ghostface Killah, Raekwon, Method Man. Just incredible, incredible musicians.
And one last thing on music before we go to the break. I presume you've been at loads of gigs, but you've nominated one gig in particular, Iggy Pop in Austin in 2016. Why this particular one?
Well, you know, I've seen Iggy Pop a lot. I actually saw him last week, which was up there as one of the best times I've seen him. But there was something about the performance when I saw him with Austin. He had a great band, Josh Holm, the drummer from Arctic Monkeys, Matt Sweeney, and yeah, they made this album together. I actually can't remember the name of the record. It was a brilliant record. So they were playing that alongside his early solo albums. And it was just a fantastic performance. Just really, really, really close to perfect. And yeah, I just, you know, you sometimes are witnessing something, whether it's art or whether it's music or theater, and you just take a step back and think, it doesn't get better than this. This is incredible. So yeah, that was the one for me.
We've actually
it changes week to week.
We've actually been able to locate a little bit of the music from Austin in 2016 from the Iggy Pop concert. This is Success. Okay, Iggy Pop, Success, live in Austin in 2016. We're going to move off to music now, Stuart, and we're going to move to movies. And for your favourite movie, you've nominated The Exorcist from 1973. Why pick that?
I think it's just one of these films that it just really gets under your skin. And I mean, a lot of horror films do, but they can be kind of cheap scares or whatever. But there's something more primal about The Exorcist. I think it's more about, I don't know, the loss of innocence and the fear of God and all sorts of pretty grandiose subjects, and the performances in it are incredible too. It's just a really amazingly well directed, well acted, kind of eerie film. Yeah. And it's just always stuck with me. So yeah, it's definitely The Exorcist for me.
We have a clip from it where Father Karras, played by Jason Miller, visits the possessed Regan, played by Linda Blair.
Hello, Regan. I'm a friend of your mother's. I'd like to help you.
You want to loosen the straps?
I'm afraid you might hurt yourself, Regan.
I'm not Regan.
I see. Well, then let's introduce ourselves. I'm Damien Karras.
And I'm the devil. Now kindly undo these straps.
If you're the devil, why not make the straps disappear?
That's much too vulgar a display of power, Karras.
Where's Regan?
In here with us.
Show me Regan and I'll loosen one of the straps.
Can you help an old altar boy, Father?
Your mother's in here with his cares. Would you like to leave a message? I see that she gets it.
If that's true, then you must know my mother's maiden name. What is it? What is it?
That works on radio, Stuart, as well, doesn't it?
I know. I was thinking I was getting the heebie-jeebies there listening to it. So, yeah. There's actually an amazing audiobook of it written by the author, narrated by the author as well, if people want to check that out too. Yeah, it's really pretty spectacular.
Favourite actor, Nicolas Cage. Why'd you pick him?
I just find him so entertaining. I don't know. I think there's very few there's lots of actors that I've seen in amazing things, but there's very few people that I would watch something just because they were in it, and he fits that category.
And then you have Stanley Kubrick as your favourite director.
Yeah, and I think that's for the detail. You know, I grew up watching The Shining in 2001 and these kind of films, and I definitely they're the kind of films that you notice more the more you watch them. And yeah, it's just a real perfectionist and also very unique. I mean, there's a lot of directors are very unique, but I think Stanley Kubrick's one of these people. Just by seeing one shot, you could tell that he'd made it.
For a favourite book, you've gone for The Wind-Up Bird Chronicle by Haruki Murakami. Tell us about this.
Yeah, he's one of my favourite writers, a Japanese writer, and this is a real epic book going through kind of generations, going over subjects like the occupation of China by Japan and probably some pretty difficult subjects for a Japanese writer. And it's just one of these books that's completely absorbing. Yeah, I really, really loved that book.
Okay, now let's go to television. When you were young, what did you grow up liking?
Well, I was thinking about this, and I think that this first stuff that I really got into was stuff like The X-Files and Millennium. Millennium was a spin-off of The X-Files, more occult kind of based. And yeah, so I really loved that. And I've always been into kind of Fortean supernatural kind of things. And that was the first TV show that I remember kind of waiting for the next episode rather than just watching it because it was on.
Well, we have a clip from The X-Files where Mulder and Scully, played by David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson, hunt for a killer who may be suffering from multiple personality disorder.
Hey, just Scully, could this be some kind of a stall, a staged diversion? It's my understanding that multiple personalities are rare.
They're extremely rare. In fact, many in the psychiatric community do not believe that dissociative identity disorder exists.
What we've witnessed meets the criteria established in the DSM-4. The presence of two or more distinct personality states that recurrently take control over behavior, including the protector identity, Sydney. The inability to recall important personal information. She couldn't recall her own hometown. Transitions from one personality state to another are usually a matter of seconds and are often caused by psychosocial stress. Sydney appeared when we mentioned that children had been abused.
But you remain unconvinced?
I believe the disorder exists, but in this case, under these circumstances, I would have to know more.
If Melissa has multiple personalities, would his testimony even be admissible?
Judicial precedents have established that dissociative personalities are responsible.
Yes, but we are responsible for Melissa Riedel.
What we are responsible for is the potential loss of 50 lives.
Do it.
You didn't even have the courage to tell Skinner what you really believe. That Melissa Riedel is being invaded by her past life incarnations.
Because he wouldn't believe me.
I don't believe that you feel responsible for those 50 lives. Or Melissa Riedel. You are only responsible to yourself, Mulder.
Stuart, I think it's fair to say, wasn't it? The X-Files was, I think, regarded as very clever and different in its day.
Yeah, it was. I think it was one of the first TV shows that didn't have an overreaching arc over the whole series rather than just like in a Scooby-Doo, everything resets at the end of every episode. I had a little bit of that, but for its time, there was characters that would come in and out. And yeah, I think it probably paved the way for what television's become now.
And then you've gone for The Pit as one of your current favourites. What's that?
Yeah, it's a hospital drama, which sounds kind of banal, but I saw it when we were in America, and it's very realistic, apparently. I don't know much about medicine, despite being brought up by a GP, but it touches on a lot of pretty sensitive social subjects, and it's pretty raw. Yeah, I thought it was really good. I don't think it's been on TV here, or maybe it has in Ireland, but yeah, I think people are going to like it a lot when they see it.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of fuss about it, saying that, and it's surprising that it hasn't arrived over in this side of the world, because it's got Noah Wyle in it from ER many, many years ago. But I think it's regarded as being absolutely top class. We actually do have a clip of it, though. This is where he's frustrated by parents who are resisting treatment for their son because of alarmist medical information online.
Georgia was sick, but she got better on her own quickly.
Yeah, many people get better on their own, like Georgia. However, as many as 1 in 20 kids that get measles get pneumonia, like your son.
Are your children vaccinated against measles?
No.
The MMR vaccine is perfectly safe. Measles is not.
We're concerned about inflammation and possible damage to Flynn's brain and spinal cord.
The measles got to his brain?
Well, his head CT was normal, but the only way to find out if he's okay is to perform a lumbar puncture.
A spinal tap?
I've read about kids who've been paralyzed from a spinal tap.
There is zero risk of paralysis.
What about bleeding or infection?
It's a perfectly safe procedure. We do it every day.
We need spinal fluid to see if Flynn has acute disseminated encephalomyelitis.
And if he does?
We treat with high-dose steroids to decrease the risk of blindness, deafness, intellectual disability, even death.
He could die from this?
The death rate from Adam is high, 1 in 5.
Do the spinal tap.
No! Can't you just give him steroids without the spinal tap?
If there's no Adam, the steroids could suppress his immune system, making it harder to fight off the pneumonia.
But it says here
Can you put your damn phone away? Your son is critically ill. The longer that we wait, the higher the risk of permanent brain damage. What is not clear here?
Hillary, he has a tube down his throat.
They're
he can't breathe on his own.
Poking holes in my son's spine!
Wow. Okay.
Let's just wait and see if he gets better.
I'm told, Stuart, it's 15 episodes and it's 15 consecutive hours of what goes on in an ER room, apparently. And you're not the only person to have been gripped by it. It's getting rave reviews in the United States.
Yeah, it was really good. It's really intense. It's not the kind of thing I would normally watch. I'm not normally a hospital show kind of person, but it seemed very raw and very well executed. And yeah, I mean, even like that thing there, I mean, in our all our lives, we'll have met people that have fallen for disinformation in the internet. And I think just bringing it up is an important thing to do in culture, you know, because it's quite a dangerous time for what is true and what is not true.
Last thing, we ask everyone for what we call a sort of a cultural buried treasure, something that people might not be familiar with. And you have given us something that I had not heard of, an album by Belong called October Language. Tell us about this.
Yeah, this is a group from New Orleans, and they're not very well known, but I think that this, in the kind of world that I'm in of kind of weird guitar music, I think that this is should be considered a bit of a classic. It sounds unlike anything I've really heard. And yeah, it's a really wonderful album.
Well, the track we're going to play a clip of is called I Never Lose, Never Really. Okay, that's the album October Language by Belong, which is the choice of Stuart Braithwaite, guitarist with Mogwai. I can see why, given the music you play, you'd like that. I hope you enjoy yourself in Galway at the Galway International Arts Festival on Thursday, 24th of July. Stuart, thank you very much for taking the time for being with us.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.